some thoughts about Yom Yerushalayim 2024. Every experience this year has to be processed through the lens or through the prism of what we're still struggling with, and doesn't seem to be the type of issue that will resolve quickly and rapidly and simply on many, many fronts, and not just military fronts. I'm actually recording this in the car. I apologize if the audio quality isn't great. I don't know how it will come out. I was in America for a day or two speaking, and I landed and to give shiur. And I'm rushing out to be with my grandchildren. Their father is back in Mila Williams. Everyone's being called back to Mila Williams, getting their second invitations to continue to defend Am Yisrael. So I hope so. These ideas are clear. And as I'm chugging along in the car, 1967 obviously was an epiphany. The heavens parted. Hashem created the natural world in 6 days, 5,784 years ago. And 57 years ago, in another 6 days, he recreated the modern world. And there's so much to celebrate, and I'll just mention things that I've spoken about in the past. So if these are a little bit of a review or repetitive, it's just important so that whatever moments you have today, tonight, tomorrow, Yom Yerushalayim, to be able to say Hodu LaHashem Ki Tov Ki Li Olam Chasdo, even without mentioning Yerushalayim or the return to Yerushalayim or the larger connotations of the Jewish world or for the Jewish world, on the months leading up to the Six-Day War, General Nasser of Egypt unified several Arab armies under his command and hurled his infamous threat. Infamous threat was to throw the Jews into the sea. Now, we laugh at that as cartoonish, although the events of the last couple months remind us that when it comes to the land of Hashem and Jewish settlement in the land of Hashem, nothing should be too far-fetched, at least in the eyes of our opponents and the opponents of Hashem. But in those days, the threat was very real. Coming as it was 19 years after the formation of the State of Israel, those intervening years between 1948 and 1967 were not robust years. They were not years of economic growth. It was food rationing. Many people don't know the difficulties of the 50s and early 60s. The turnstiles moved in one direction. More, at least, Western Jews, a lot of Arab Jews from Arab countries came, refugees, being evicted from their countries, many Central Europeans. But Westerners, we all know the stories of people that came and had to leave because it was too hard for them. Every family has that story of an uncle or a grandfather who came to Palestine or came to the new state of Israel and just couldn't earn a living and had to move and had to go back to Europe or go to the United States. Years of diplomatic isolation, years of wars of attrition, years of terror, years which we really weren't yet armed or supported by foreign allies such as the United States and Great Britain and Germany. For weeks at least, before the war, people would come to yeshiva, would come to school, and just say Tehillim, regardless of the ideology, just hours of Tehillim and go back home. No tests, no term papers, no projects. Most people have stories, as I do in my family, of women and children who were sent home, sent abroad to get out of harm's way. I have an aunt, Alas Shalom, who spent the 67 war in, I think, Switzerland it was. So the situation was very bleak on the eve of the Six-Day War. There's an old joke, which old-timers know, that in 1967 the situation was so grave that the joke was whoever is the last to leave Ben-Gurion should shut out the lights. Namely, the last person to leave the country. They were digging mass graves in national parks. Tens of thousands of casualties were expected. The war has undergone horrible historical revisionism, as if it was a war about territory and about land, and nothing could be further from the truth. This was a war of survival. There were no bomb shelters. people walking to their basements in Tel Aviv, gambling, right? Going to a basement was a gamble. If you stayed on a regular floor and the house was shelled, then that floor would probably collapse. But the basement doesn't collapse. So if you're in a basement, it's a 50-50 chance. If the right side of the building gets shelled and you're on the right side of the building, even if you're in the basement, it'll collapse on you. But if you happen to be in the left side in the basement, then you're safe. That was the only option for safety. And then miraculously, the next morning, the voice of came across the radio. There's no Egyptian Air Force. And the military victories that are still studied in West Point and other military installations, the wars that were fought, the miracles that were performed. When we recite the last couple of months, Achinu Kol Beis Yisrael, we say, Be'afel Yora, we're hoping in particular for the hostages, but for all of Am Yisrael, but that was really Be'afel Yora, the Nisim that we witnessed, the Atzala of Am Yisrael. We're probably some of the most Nisim, gluing the most overt Nisim since the Beis HaMikdash. Who is to even know? Maybe even since the first Beis HaMikdash. And I'll talk a little bit later about how this impacted the Jewish world. And then, of course, there's a second layer to the Nisim and to the celebration and to the moment. The return to Yerushalayim. It was the furthest thing from our imagination. We begged King Hussein for weeks, Jordan, this is not your war. We're fighting the Egyptians to the south, the Syrians to the north. Stay out of it. On that day, Hashem didn't just intervene in history, but he intervened in the human heart. General Nasser duped. Anti-Semites get duped. We're seeing a lot of anti-Semites today getting duped into believing all sorts of anti-Semitic tropes and canards about colonialism and white supremacy. King Hussein is duped by General Nasser. General Nasser telegraphed him that Egyptian divisions are marching on Ashdod, marching on Tel Aviv, come join the war, and they'll share in the rewards. And Egyptian divisions, where I have to say hello to the person at the... Hi, Manishma, Shalom. I just went through a machzom. Egyptian divisions were being surrounded in the Sinai Desert and surrendering to the Israeli army. They were not marching on Tel Aviv and Ashdod. Fake news, Mahajimin and Mahajim par excellence. And within days, scenes we've dreamed of for thousands of years, marching into Shar Yafo, Matagor, Moshe Dayan, Umdos Hayiragleno Bisharayach Yerushalayim, the Kotel. And not just Yerushalayim, but the biblical corridor, the swath of land that snakes from Shechem, Beit El, current day Beit El in the north, snaking its way through Yerushalayim, down to Beit Lechem, Hebron, moving its way through Gush, where I live, down to Beersheba. That's where Tanakh unfolded. Tanakh didn't unfold in Haifa, Tel Aviv. Those are important parts of modern Israel. But to return to our homeland, to return to the land of Tanakh, to return to Yerushalayim, and the zeal and the euphoria that launched the settlers movement, and you have to distinguish between real politics and vision. A person can claim, from a real political standpoint, I'm not saying I support this position, but it's legitimate that settlement should be curbed, that two states should be enabled. Those are all legitimate political positions. But even if you feel practically, if that's your position, that settlement should be curbed, the goal of Am Yisrael settling the entirety of Eretz Yisrael, which was promised us by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the, for those who oppose aggressive settlements, moderate settlements and moderate efforts and internationally approved efforts or internationally framed efforts as opposed to bucking international interests. I don't want to say international law because that's a farcical application. I don't want to get into the weeds of that. So regardless of your politics about the settlements, the fact that 1967 launched our return to Greater Eretz Yisrael has to be part of our hallel, has to be part of our Hodul Hashem Kitov. And that's the second layer of Yom Yerushalayim. And the third layer is, of course, what happens in Yerushalayim ripples across the entire Jewish world. Yerushalayim is called Kir Shechubu LaYachdav. It's a city that unites and connects. And looking aside from unity, because that's something which is still elusive to us and for us, what it does magnetize Jews from different stripes and different ideological sectors and different cultures. And in particular, when you think about the phenomena of Russian Aliyah, a million and a half or so Russians who moved to Israel, transformed the country in the 90s and early 2000s. I think it's one of the most underappreciated parts of the history of the modern state and how impactful it was. And Russian Jewry was stymied by the Soviet Union, and Jews had no clue they were Jewish and what their identity was, and suddenly the cackling voice of America describing the military victories in the sands of Sinai that percolated back east to Russia, to Moscow, to Leningrad, to Jews who had no clue who they were. They were Jewish, and it awakened something. It awakened Jewish identity. It awakened a Jewish soul, much in the same way, obviously different than the events of October 7th. Have in their own way awakened Jewish identity in so many who we thought didn't possess it. And it transformed Russian Jewry. By transforming Russian Jewry, it transformed our people. But make no mistake about it, it didn't just ripple eastward, it rippled westward. And Western Jewish communities had their cognitive moment. For the Orthodox world, it was certainly a turning point. This is when yeshivos, Torah institutions, robust Orthodox communities begin to flourish. I'm less familiar with the impact they may have had on other sectors of Judaism, but certainly centering Israel as part of Jewish identity, something which I think is clear to all of us after October 7th. You can't have a Jewish identity if it doesn't include the state of Israel. I don't mean in a messianic way. You could be someone that doesn't feel that this is the hand of God, but still realize that this is a place where our people are living and settling and building their future. And let's say you take a more Haredi approach, and we're a holding pattern waiting for Hashem to install meaning. I don't think there's a Jew alive who can imagine long-term Jewish viability without Israel, a state of Israel, small s, capital S. And that really shifted in 1967. Aliyah started, camps, trips, building apartments, buying apartments, visiting for Yom Tov. A lot of younger people don't realize how different it was before 1967. Now, this was kind of no man's land, but how many people actually came and visited? How many trips were there? Summer, gap year? These are phenomena that many people in our world take for granted, and they're all a product of euphoria and the excitement of 1967. So there's so much to celebrate, and the Nisim, the Hatzalah, the return to Yerushalayim, the parting of the heavens. And yet here we are, 2024, and the heavens shuttered on that seventh day. In 6 days in 1967, the world was recreated. And on the seventh day in 2024, Shabbos Kodesh, the heavens shuttered. And we suffered a type of attack we couldn't imagine could exist in our modern reality. In our homeland, on Shabbos. And no euphoria, it was a day of sadness and agony and suffering and trauma, which we're still processing. So the question becomes, how to say Hallel tomorrow, if you're someone that says Hallel, or how to note the Nisim, even if halachically you're not a Hallel sayer, but how to thank Hashem, how to process this day of Zehayom Masa Hashem Nagila V'Nismacha Bo, with so much sadness and so much darkness around us. It's a similar question I asked about Yom HaTzmaut, a similar question I ask about every major milestone this year. It's historically myopic to just close your eyes and take a day off from the tragedy we're wrestling with. It's morally insensitive. It's not holistic. Holism means when you're going through an experience of this magnitude and of this trauma, you don't look away. So how can we celebrate Yom Yerushalayim without looking away? So first of all, I think that 2024 provided a little sobriety to the giddiness of 1967. You see, we don't really have a tradition for redemption. That's our problem. We're engaged now in an experience which we have no tradition for. By definition, we were never redeemed before, and the last time we were redeemed was 2,000 years ago, and we have scant records about it, and it wasn't documented, and Judaism is a religion that doesn't overstress redemption for all sorts of dangers and perils. One of the problems of redemption is that it provides overconfidence, as if we're invulnerable and invincible, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is on our side, and any and every, and to a degree you sense that a little bit with the people who entered Eretz Yisrael, and they thought they were invulnerable, and they took, let's say, took advantage, but they weren't as careful and as scrupulous, and that's the entire Achan I situation, where they, Achan took from spoils of war that were illegal, and Am Yisrael lost the Battle of Ai. I apologize, there's an ambulance passing by. And the second issue of redemption is it doesn't just breed overconfidence, but it breeds unrealistic expectations. As if redemption is quick and rapid, flawless, an overhaul of humanity, electric, transformative, apocalyptic, night and day, the world changes in an instant. And there was some of that in the post-1967 environment. I think some of that lasted beyond 1967. And every time we hit snags in the redemptive process, as we did in 1996 with the Oslo Accords or with the withdrawal from Gaza, people wrestled with navigating a process which was more rocky than it was smooth, a historical landing which was turbulent. And one thing 2024 has demonstrated is just because we're living through a process that's inching its way towards redemption doesn't mean there won't be setbacks and lags and pauses and tragedies and frustrations. And we know how this ends long term. We have prophecies. We have Geula. We know exactly who will remain in this land and one day will be graced with HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shechina, with Binyan Beis HaMikdash. But we don't know how quickly, and we also don't know how that road will look like. And this is, to me, one of the messages that my Rebbe, Rav Amital, hammered into us, even during these what look like minor setbacks in the past. And it should be obvious to everyone after 2024. So I think one way to parse Yom Yerushalayim in 2024 is to be able to rectify some of the misguided conclusions and assumptions that 1967 generated. I think another way is that 2024, when juxtaposed to 1967, helps us retain our perspective, because perspective during times of tragedy is so important, especially as Jewish history unfolds. Yes, we suffered. Yes, there was a tragedy. Yes, we're still going through a nightmare. Yes, it's nightmares. I just landed last night and the bodies of 4 hostages were recovered, and it's a national convulsion. Because you've got 2 opposing values and goals, it's hard to find some reconciliation. I was just speaking to a Rav in America. I was just in America, and he said that within the span of a week, they had families of hostages who are legitimately campaigning. I'm not in any way stating a political preference. They're campaigning that a ceasefire deal should be reached as quickly as possible to save the lives. What value could be more important than saving the lives of people that have been living underground, tortured, or who knows what? And then the next week he's having families of soldiers, fallen soldiers, and a lot of their voices is our children sacrifice their lives for this war. And if this war doesn't end conclusively and it just allows Hamas to re-entrench itself, then what will their sacrifice be worth? And it's just that dilemma that our enemies, Yimach Shemam, have created for us, that trap. It's hard. But think about where we were in 1967 and where we are now. 1967, with the 2.4 million Jews in Israel. I think they're close to 8 million Jews. Look at the progress. Our state isn't famous. We have real issues, and the North is literally in flames, and there are real struggles and hardships ahead. But the state of Israel is a far more stable situation, let alone not just comparing 2024 to 1967, but comparing 2024 to any other period in Jewish history. What would our great-grandparents do to switch places with us? With all the struggle we have in Israel, with all the rabid, hateful, despicable, repugnant anti-Semitism that we face, and it's really, like I said, it's nauseating to see scenes. I wasn't at the parade, but I saw pictures from the parade in New York City, and there's a protest group of all the things to protest against, to hold up a sign, let the hostages die. How crass, how demonic do you have to be to hold that sign up? There are a million other ways to express your hatred of human beings. How low and degraded do you get in a person who's completely innocent? I'm not a combatant, they're just an 85-year-old man. And they should die. So that's hatred in its raw and purest form. But the perspective that though this is a pogrom, this was a pogrom, it's the first pogrom in history that was followed by a war. And the previous pogroms, we didn't have the capacity to defend ourselves. And just the state of the Jewish world in general, not just in Israel. And given all the anti-Semitism we're facing, at least at this point, it hasn't deteriorated to state-run death and anti-Semitism. And by and large, at least until this point, countries are still offering us the protection that we deserve under law. And so important to have that perspective during a time of crisis. We will make it through this crisis. Be'ezus Hashem, we daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it should be smooth and without suffering, without the hardships that we've faced, and the adversity that we faced. But both historically, when held up to the broader span of Jewish history, and even when comparing 2024 to 1967, we have a lot to be thankful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And sometimes it takes a step back, like 2024, to better appreciate the larger picture. And the third issue to me is to try to connect. The 67 and 2024 seem very different. But to me, there's one common thread. You see, the beginning of the Arab-Israeli conflict pitted a rivalry of two different nationalist movements. Zionism was secular nationalism. That's why so many Orthodox people refused it, because any ideology that doesn't center religion in their minds was impure and ungodly. And Arab opposition was a product of pan-Arab nationalism of the 20th century, where Arabs reawakened to their culture, to their identity, and a feeling of lost culture and culture that had been colonized, hence the colonial narrative. And they didn't want to cede territory, and they didn't want to allow Jewish settlement. And it was two rival movements of nationalism. Within that, it was very hard to sense that this is a larger battle of history and a battle over Hashem and Hashem's people. It's nationalism. You have your nationalism, Ukrainian nationalism, Hungarian nationalism, British nationalism, Argentinian nationalism, Jewish nationalism, and Arab nationalism. They happen to converge and clash over a small parcel of land. 67 changed that equation. 48 didn't create the same ideological shudder, because returned to a very, very small and contracted parcel of land, smaller than we had hoped for, even under some of the more preliminary arrangements. But it was also, the Jews were in a very vulnerable position. The world was happy to allow this state to be born because it solved the practical issue of refugees. And more so, it provided a salve for the world's guilty conscience. When Jews returned to Greater Israel in 1948, didn't cause a shudder. 1967 was different. When Jews returned to Yerushalayim, to the city of Hashem, the people of Hashem, and the city of Hashem, Shem Wamim Yergosim, that caused the shudder. That causes the shudder. And for some, the shudder is actually a welcome shudder. Evangelists see this as a moment or a chapter in their messianic endgame. They support us. Thank God for their support. But for most people, it sends a shudder. And subliminally, everyone knows this is where history began. This is where it will end. And they can't allow the people of God to be in the city of God. It's all about Yerushalayim. And 1967 converted what would have been otherwise cast as a rivalry between nationalist movements into a battle over the presence of Hashem in this world and the presence of the people of Hashem. It lent a religious and ideological tone to the process. Well, if 1967 evoked that tone, 2024 amplified that tone. It should be clear to everyone this isn't just some sideshow or geopolitical skirmish and over the sands of Gaza or over secure borders. That's the primary military purpose. But in so many ways, which I'm not going to outline, I've spoken about on so many occasions, and it's in my book, so many ideas that are being wrestled over the face of Hashem in this world, the image of religion, how Olam Haba is being cast, what type of culture of death, Tzelem Elokim, anti-Semitism, broken cultural values, intersectionality, and postmodernism. There's so many values that are part of this war, part of this confrontation. And now it should be clear that this is an epic chapter in the history of Am Yisrael, and by extension, in parallel, an epic chapter in trying to defend the presence of Hashem in this world. And that's something which both 1967 in 2024 made clear, each in their own way. 67 in a way that ended in immediate triumph, and 2024 in a way that ultimately will lead to triumph. It's just hard to know and hard to see. We know how this all ends. We know the end point, the terminus of this whole process. It doesn't excuse us from struggling with it and wrestling with it. We're not an escapist religion. We don't escape the messianic prophecies and ignore real-time issues and real-time adversity. But just some thoughts so that Yom Yerushalayim becomes an integral part of this year or 8 month, 9 month old struggle. Number one, absorb the fact, internalize the fact that not everything after 1967 will be smooth and immediate and sterling and lustrous. Number two, take the opportunity to appreciate what 1967 accomplished and how much we've grown since then, despite the crushing losses we suffered this year. And number three, try to identify the commonality between 1967 and 2024. Both of them reminded us that we're part of a larger narrative, the presence of Hashem in this world, as represented by His people, who are meant to broadcast His presence from His land. Yom Yerushalayim Sameach to everyone.